Welcome to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Listen and grow as Del questions the status quo, encourages you to think differently, and empowers you to make a better life. Get ready as Del challenges core beliefs, seeks the truth, and reveals the roadmap to the lifestyle you really want. And now your host, multi-millionaire, national award-winning investor, CEO and founder of Lifestyles Unlimited, Del Walmsley.
Welcome to Del Walmsley Radio Show, where the hype ends and the help begins. I'm your host, Del Walmsley, and as always, I'm working on your financial freedom. My friends, I want to tell you that I got an interesting call. In fact, I actually had two interesting calls yesterday, where people called me up and talked to me about their personal financial situation and about what they wanted to do. And it's really interesting how people will get it in their mind that they want to go do something. They'll go take the steps necessary to do it. And then just as soon as they get any pushback at all, they just kind of retreat. And, you know, sometimes it's something physical in your life. We all get sick. We all get hurt. And I know it's a devastating thing. And at that point, you can't think of anything but that injury or that sickness or that illness. Or other things come along, like jobs come and go, or layoffs, pay cuts, or even promotions get in your way sometimes. I mean, all of a sudden, now you got to learn a new job, do a new thing, go a new place. Life gets in the way. And as I speak with people, I don't know how to communicate sometimes that we all go through this. It's just a matter of how do you react to it? It's not what life gives you. It's what you do with what life gives you. So let me give you an example of one of the smaller ones in life. Okay, this is just a very small issue. Everybody has big issues, medium-sized issues, and small issues. This is just a small issue. This is what they call rich people problems. So it's that mid-holiday now between Thanksgiving and Christmas. And during that time, we always go through these psychological battles of, are we going to put up our Christmas stuff? Are we not going to put up our Christmas stuff? Are all the family members coming in? Or are they not coming in? Being that our family members are not rich, they're just regular people, they have their issues they have to go through and find their way here. Of course, we always come here because the house is 16,000 square feet and there's place for everybody to be. But even so, the bottom line is that, you know, even if we pay for their airfare and stuff to get them here, it's still like, can they take off from work? Can they take off from school? Are they healthy enough to make the trip? You know, there's a thousand things. So all that's going on. We all know this. You all go through the same thing. The easiest ones, if they all live in the neighborhood, but, you know, if they don't, you got to come in from all over the country. You've got to arrange all that and time all that and so on and so forth. And then you get into this next issue, which is, okay, how much decorations do we put up? And, you know, some people are just Christmas freaks. There's no doubt about it. Nothing wrong with that. If that's who you are, I'm not putting it down. I'm just saying you are. And you see people just go crazy on this stuff. But my problem was is that I was born poor, lived poor, was growing up as a kid, and we were frugal. I guess frugal is a better word for it. I don't know, poor. I don't even know what poor is. I mean, starving on the side of a street, you know, eating out of a trash can might be poor. But we were frugal. And so we never wasted money on these types of things. In fact, I think back to it, and it always blew my mind when I thought back to it. We never really went on a vacation my entire life. My family never took a true vacation. We just took off and went somewhere and stayed there and blah, blah, blah. So that's kind of strange, but that's how frugal we were. My dad was very tight with money. His dad was even tighter than he is. Came out of the recession type of deal. So when it comes to Christmas, and I live in a really nice neighborhood, all the houses here are very expensive. People have to have some money to live here because just the maintenance of the houses alone is ungodly. But all of a sudden, you see them starting to put up all this Christmas stuff, and you start thinking to yourself, and this is where I can't be a Republican or a Democrat, because I'm just a human being. And I start seeing unbelievable amounts of money. I was talking to my wife. She says, we should wrap our trees. How much does it cost to wrap your trees? She goes, it's about $1,500 to $2,500 a tree. I go, are you out of your mind? I said, That's, you could buy a luxury car for the amount of money it costs to wrap these trees. And she goes, but the neighbors all have them all wrapped. And I go, yeah, it's great. We'll watch their, we'll look at their lights and ours and not have it. And it's so funny because you start thinking of the amounts of money people are spending on this stuff. And to myself, I'm thinking, think of all the people in our family included. I mean, we'll go down my family tree, her family tree, both sides. And they can't afford to even have a savings account or a retirement plan or a retirement fund or anything. They're just barely eking it out week after week, month after month. And I know that that's not, we're not the only family like that. I mean, I think that's probably everybody. You see it on news all the time. People are just really saying it's tough. And then I see them spending money. Like, okay, it's tough, but wait. Every kid you know has every piece of electronics made. Everybody you know has every piece of electronics. Our cable bill is more than my house note used to be. It's unbelievable. You just go down the line, one thing after the other, after the other, after the other. You see money wasted and wasted and wasted and wasted and wasted and wasted. See, Dale, boy, you really are the Grinch. Go, yeah, sure. It really sounds like being the Grinch at this time of season, doesn't it? However, there's a method to my madness. And I had to figure this out very early on in life. If I wanted to have a family, if I wanted to stay married, if I wanted to not have my family hate me, not have all my employees hate me, if I didn't, you know, if I had the Grinch attitude, there was nobody going to want to communicate with me. So I had to figure it out. And what I did was very early on was I decided in November of every year, somewhere between October and November, I'm going to buy another property. And that property will make enough profit to pay for all of the holiday gifts and all the wrapping and all the setup and all the everything for the whole year, not just for Christmas. So I just bought another property. The property I'll be closing on by the end of the year will make enough money to pay for anything and everything that would be a gift-type status in my family, in my life, to all my family members, just by having this one more property. So, well, what does that mean? Well, it means all the other properties I've already bought just keep producing money. And they just keep producing and producing and producing and producing. And that money stacks up and stacks up and stacks up and stacks up. And then all of a sudden one day I've got a pile of money sitting here to be able to buy the next property the next year. And if you just got into that process, if that's all you did was do one annual purchase a year to increase your net worth and to increase your cash flow, one property a year, that's all it would take. If you did that, by the time you got old like me, you'd be pretty well off like I am. But most people just can't get started. They can't do the one. And what's funny is, you know as well as I do, what happens is you start out by, okay, it's the Christmas stuff you have to buy to set up. You just came out of the Thanksgiving dinner and the Thanksgiving stuff you had to buy. Now you're setting up for Christmas and you're buying all this Christmas stuff and putting it up. And then you start setting up for the Christmas dinners. We've already started cooking. We've got like two or three different gigantic pots on the stove. We're cooking all these different meals that we then freeze, have it ready to go when people get here. You know what it's all about, but it sort of tends to make you start thinking, okay, is this a year end? What happened? What did we do this year? And I was talking to somebody, and he said, one of the questions that he asked me was based on this amount of income, and I'm not going to share how much income it was, but it was a substantial amount of income. He said, based on this amount of income, how much real estate would I need to own to be able to cover that? And I really gave him kind of a hemi-haw kind of answer on the deal because I said it depends on what type you buy, you know, what kind of leverage you're using, what your tax base is now. In other words, if you make $100,000 a year, you know, you're probably only taking home about $60,000 a year. If you're making $200,000 a year, you're really only bringing home $120,000 a year. So you need to replace $120,000, not $200,000. So we have to look at your tax situation and so on and so forth to figure that out, how to totally replace it. Then there's also the reality of that if you replace your earned income, you don't have to go to work anymore. So now you don't need all those work clothes and all the gasoline to go to work every day and the automobile, you know, the leverage on the automobile to drive back and forth, back and forth, back and forth every day. There's a lot of things go away. They really do. It's amazing. I've been retired since I was 35 years old, and just all of the headaches and hassles and things that go on are just gone. It's just an amazing way to live life. So, you know, I didn't give the guy a straight answer, but here's why I really had a hard time with it. And that was because the property I was buying for myself, I am buying for myself right now that I'll close by the end of the year, literally that property could replace his entire income. One property, boom, done, over with. Now I can't tell him that. You know, as a mentor, as a person that markets training programs, you can't go out there and brag that one property could put you away. Because it just, number one, it comes off precocious. Number two, what if they can't do it, right? You know, what if they don't have what it takes to go buy one and run one or whatever? The bottom line is that, you know, real estate's not for everybody. But for those people that are willing to do what it takes to own it, man, it's powerful. I mean, literally, the one property I'm buying right now would have retired that person if he wanted to be retired bad enough. Now, he actually didn't want to. He said, I want another three or four, 5 good years left of working. Why would I give away this ability to earn income? That's an interesting concept, too. Why would you give away the ability to earn income? I mean, that's a smart statement in some aspects. I still can get up and work. Why would I give that away? It's like wasted energy, wasting this resource I have. But then I'll turn it around on you and say, well, wait a minute. If you really feel that way about waste, think of all of your net worth you have wasting away. I asked this guy, I said, do you have any cash flow? He said, no. And he had a tremendous amount of money. I'm going to make up a number. I think it was somewhere between $3 and $5 million he had in his retirement account / not government retirement accounts. In other words, you have some of your stuff in your 401k and IRA, that kind of stuff. But he had all these other types of things that he had money into. And it was between $3 and $5 million, something like that. And he had way more than enough to retire. But the problem was, I asked him, did you have any cash flow? He goes, no, all my stuff is capital gain stuff. I said, so you don't have any cash flow at all? Well, you see, you can't retire when you have no cash flow. Now, I'm completely different. I invest for cash flow, and then capital gains is a side event that occurs just out of the natural inflation of real estate. Real estate goes up in value. Boom. That's all there is to it. It's inflation. It is an inflation hedge, just like gold is an inflation hedge. If you don't believe me, go look at what the median price of a single family house has done over the last 25 years. It's gone up every year, right? Doesn't go down. So there might be, your neighborhood might have a bad 6 months or a year, but in general, real estate in general. Now, commercial real estate, office buildings, they got whacked during the pandemic thing, and that really destroyed that industry. Now, guess what? That industry is coming back. It's happening. I'm noticing it because I'm trying to replace one of my offices with a new office, and the rents have started to go up. You go, man, that's terrible. I wanted to get in when the rents were down. But that's the bottom line, is this stuff just keeps going up. But what you don't have a guarantee of, because the guarantee of inflation will make everything more expensive, including the stuff you own, make it worth more. But what you don't have a guarantee of is that you have enough cash flow to survive. And if you don't have cash flow, you can't pay property tax. Like, I got a property tax bill yesterday. I paid my personal residence property tax bill. I told my wife, I said, you know, I'm a lot older than she is, 20 years, something like that. And I said, you need to realize when I'm gone, you have to have that cash to pay that tax bill. That property tax bill is huge. I mean, it's more than some people make in a year. That's my property tax bill. And then my insurance bill is as large or larger. So you're talking about ungodly amounts of money. It's got to be paid all at once. We don't have a mortgage, so we don't pay month by month by month. We have to just pay it all at once. And when you realize that and you think about that, you go, you better have some cash in place. You can't just get at the end of the year and go, you know, our house needs to pay the taxes, insurance, honey. Well, what do? Sell some stock? Every time you sell stock, you lose your asset. I don't dig into my assets every month. I don't touch them at all, in fact. They just keep spitting out money. I put in these little accounts. I have an account for each asset, and they just spit it into those accounts. Those accounts grow. Those accounts have savings account parallels. So the money just doesn't sit in a checking account, sits over here in a savings account. collects money, and that money then eventually gets siphoned off and go buy something else, buy another investment. The amount that we live on is so minuscule compared to the whole thing. It's unbelievable. But we can live on more and more and more every year and not even touch it. Why? Because I buy more and more and more every year. So here we are. We're in December. You know, that little happy spot between Thanksgiving and Christmas. You really have all the time in the world. You need to get back in here. You need to get mentally in place to take action. Maybe even do something before the end of the year and make this year not a failure for you, not a loss. Take a short break. Be right back with the Del Walmsley Radio Show.
You don't have to keep guessing about your financial future. Learn how people use real estate investing to build income over time. Text RADIO to 88007. That's RADIO to 88007. Presented by Lifestyles Unlimited.
You're hearing the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Want more life-changing knowledge? Access our podcast and listen on demand at lifestylesunlimited.com under the radio tab. Now your host, Del Walmsley.
Welcome back to Del Walmsley Radio Show. Today we're talking about how the holidays have snuck up on us. Thanksgiving is past, Christmas is on its way, and the end of the year is right around the corner. And I'm in a situation where I'm buying my yearly property. Always increase my portfolio every single year. And I've got mine lined up, locked up, and in contract and getting ready to close. And I'm bringing the point to you that you should be in that same situation. Now I'm going to bring one more point out in this segment that I think is important. And that is, when do you think it is the easiest time of year to buy a great property? Well, it's when everybody else is not trying to buy a great property. When do you think that is? Well, that's when everybody is busy. They're all up to their behinds in holiday preparation and year-end preparation and all the different things, trying to coordinate and arrange people to come and go for the Thanksgiving and come and go for Christmas and get out and buy and shop and set up for the Christmas stuff. And where, Del, where in all of that insanity would I find time to go find a deal? And the answer is, you won't. That's why I did. That's why I do. That's why our smart members do. They wait until the end of the year when everybody else has turned off their machines. And anybody who's out there stuck who needs to make a deal happen by the end of the year. Think about it. I've got to close a deal by the end of the year to get this off my books, tax-wise, money-wise, property tax-wise. Whatever it is, it's got to come off my books before the end of the year. Somebody, please make me an offer. And that's exactly what happens. You go around this time of the year and you start making offers. We have a tremendous number of deals right now that are in the pipeline at Lifestyles because people went and made lowball offers. And lowball is not the right word for it. We made correct offers. We made offers that are what the price should be and what we were willing to buy it at, not at what the sellers wanted. And so that gap between buyer desire and seller's desire of what should happen in the transaction is going to get skewed during the holidays because the seller in many times is in a situation where they need the sale to go down by the end of the year. And the buyer doesn't need it. But the buyer, if you're smart, is in there working to solve the seller's problem. What is his problem? He needs to close the deal by the end of the year. That's the problem, right? And so you get out there and you start looking. You're going to have to touch 1,000 different deals. And, you know, electronically, that's very possible. You just, first of all, you can do data searches. And so you can look at thousands of properties and sort and search and find the ones you want to look at. You find 5 or 10 or 15 that meet your needs. Then you start going after the data on those and you make some initial inquiries. You knock that down to maybe 5 or 10, and then you go out and look at those 5 or 10. And make your offers on those. And, of course, many of them are going to say, no way, your offer's too low. I'm not interested in that. And say, okay, well, you know, it's right now, it's the end of October, maybe sometime in November if you haven't sold it yet. Because if you don't sell it in November, you're not going to get it closed by December. You know, maybe sometime in November you'll call me back and you'll be more interested. Maybe we'll be closer to each other. And lo and behold, you get that call in November. Hey, are you still willing to give me that offer you made me in October? And you say, yeah, I think I am. Let me go ahead. Let's do some due diligence and see if you're still where you're at, you know. And then many times you get there, and they've taken their eye off the ball because they've been trying to sell it, and the thing's even worse than it was when you looked at it the first time. You maybe even lower your offer a little bit. It happens all the time. But whatever it is, maybe it doesn't. You go back and say, okay, we'll do this deal, whether it's at the same price you offered before or a little bit lower or whatever. Never higher during this time of the year, ever. I guarantee you. Price does not go up during November. It just doesn't. So you get this thing done. You say, okay, we agree. You get into letter of intent out there, and then the letter of intent turns into a earnest money contract, which is a buy-sell agreement written up by the attorneys. And then you start your due diligence, and you go through due diligence, and you process it. All the time you're working to get set up to take over the property, get out there, start earning the money. Whether it's a property that has staff or not, if it's a small property, you don't have staff, that's one thing. If you have a property that has staff, you need to go meet the staff that's there now, decide which ones you want to keep. If you don't like somebody, you think you're going to replace them, well, then you better go out and start interviewing for someone to replace them. It's a process, and you go through it. But by the time the process is all done, you got a property that's making you more money in 1 year than you spend on all your holidays. Makes it all worth it. You changed your entire family's direction, life, plan, everything by taking this one action. Now, the worst one I ever had was I had to go in the hospital in December. So it was literally the holidays, and I was in the hospital getting my intestine taken out. I had polyps or something that they had to take out or I would die, just a minor thing like that. So they cut me open, took my intestine out, gave me a colostomy sac, which is the worst in the world. I used to joke about it my entire life till I had one. Then it wasn't funny anymore. But I had to do due diligence from the hospital. And so I got up out of the hospital, met with a group of people from Lifestyles who helped me do the due diligence. So we walked the property. We figured out what it needed to be repaired. We came up with repair estimates. We signed the agreements, did the lease audit again. Everything was worked out. And when it was all over, it felt so good to know that I was able to do this, just coming out of the hospital, having signed the contract, going into the hospital, knowing that I was going to complete my annual goal of purchasing a property, even though I waited to the last minute and I was sick and it looked like it wasn't going to happen. So this is all good stuff, guys. And what I'm wanting you to see is that, number one, this is the right time of year to get a really good deal. Number two, this is the right time of year to get it done before the year's over. Number three, you need to be thinking about your future. It's coming up on, the first of the year. You're going to have another one of those, New Year's resolutions that I'll do something I didn't do in 2025 in 2026. It's just one of those things, guys, you got to get it into your system. I eat the same way. I diet the same way. Been doing it for 35 years. It's just the way I do it. I invest the same way. Been doing it for 35 years. It's a habit. You have the habit of not investing. I have the habit of investing. You need to build a new habit. You can't get rid of an old habit, which is to do nothing, to be lazy. But you can replace it with a new habit, which is to do something and to be effective. Be proactive. Take your life in your own hands and be proactive. Do not let life dictate to you. You go dictate to life what needs to happen. That's the important thing, right? You have to take control of you. If you don't, they say, if whatever you believe, and I've talked to this guy, so whatever you believe, as the saying goes, if you believe you can or you believe you can't, you're right. This was a different guy I was talking to. And he just got scared. He just stopped because I got scared. I couldn't do it. I said, well, I know you can't. Why? Because if you think you can't, you can't. If you think you can, you can. So how do you flip that switch? I think you get down to Lifestyles. You meet with people that are doing it, that are just like you. They wear the same kind of clothes you wear, the same kind of shoes you wear. They have the same kind of job you have. And you see them doing it just as scared as you are, they were. And they work through the fear. That's what I think you have to do, is you have to learn to work through the fear. Courage is not ever being afraid. Courage is being afraid and doing it anyway. That's courage. It's been told to me ever since I was a little kid, whether it be sports, whether it be military, whether it be taking a test, whether it be anything, any goal you have in life you're afraid of, fear is just false evidence appearing real. It's an acronym. It's not real. Fear isn't really going to happen to you. You are going to make happen what is going to happen, and it's up to you to decide what that's going to be. You have to perform a miracle. What is the miracle? Whatever it is you think you can't do. And once you do it, it's a miracle. It's been done, and it can be done over and over and over again. All right, moving on. There are that group of you out there, and I'm going to come down harsh on you, actually. I think just came to my mind I should be harsh about this, that you believe that giving is important. And I really believe giving is important also. But I think that giving blindly is ineffective, inefficient. So I'm going to take you back to the concept of if you're on an airplane and the plane starts to go down and the air masks pop out of the ceiling, the instructions are to put yours on first and then onto your kids and your disabled family members. Why is that? Because if you go down, you can't help anybody. That's the important part to understand. And so when you come to these holidays and you go, honey, we got to give away everything we have. We got to give away large portions to the church or to multiple churches, to people on the street. We have to give away stuff to our family members. We have to give away stuff to everybody. Okay, I like that. What I don't like is you're giving away your sustenance, your base, your survival package, your life's investment. What you need to do is build up enough wealth and income that you can afford to give to the levels you want to give. Tony Robbins is very, very wealthy. And Tony Robbins talked about when he first decided he wanted to go back and create this endowment for food for Thanksgiving or Christmas. I can't remember which one it was. But because he had starved when he was a kid, he was poor, and somebody had brought him some food for Christmas, I think it was. It was either Thanksgiving or Christmas. He decided that he was going to start up this ministry that every holiday, whichever it was, Thanksgiving or Christmas, he was going to go get food and take it to these people's houses. He even had his kids do it with him so that he built that type of giving muscle. And giving is a muscle. The more you do of it, the more you can do of it. But if you give away your sustenance and then you become a welfare pimp, you live off the world, you can't support yourself, you can't create enough income to retire yourself and your family, and your family lives on every governmental welfare program there is out there, I'm not impressed. Yet I have poor family members who believe it's so important that they send their $10 to St. Jude's Hospital. Why? If you're broke, what does that $10 do for them that wouldn't be better placed with you? It just doesn't make any sense. I tell people all the time, let's set up for some big giving. You want to do some good? Let's do some real good. Let's take the small amounts of money you want to give away today, let's invest it and make it grow to the size that you'll be able to give away large amounts of money in the future. Very large. 10x times, 20x times, 50x times. That's what you want to see. You want to get out there and build your giving muscles. Set yourself a goal. I'm going to produce enough income that I can give this much away in December. I'll give away all my December income. In other words, if I have rental properties that make money 12 months out of the year, I'll take whatever it takes in December to pay my rent, mortgage payments and bills and whatever. And whatever the profit is left, boom, I'm giving it away. Cool. Then next year, let's try to double that. Let's try to have twice as much income coming in December so you can give away twice as much. Now, that's a goal I can get my arms around. You just need to see it that way. Because if you don't put your mask on first and get your oxygen, you're dead. Then nobody gets anything. Or if you go on welfare, if you go broke, nobody gets anything. In fact, you start sucking away the oxygen from everybody else, killing off everybody else's hard work by sucking it out from underneath them as a welfare pimp. I mean, come on, guys. This is about doing more with what you have. And if you're not thinking about doing more with what you have, then what are you thinking? I know. You're groveling. Did we get more presents for our kids in the grants and the the cousins got? Did our kids do better off than the cousins? Are we the grandmother that gave more stuff than the other grandmother? I mean, I know how it all goes. You're just out there spending blindly like it doesn't mean anything. Instead of thinking it through, going, you know, let's set these kids up. I have a member that she, instead of giving her kids money for Christmas and toys and gifts and stuff, they get one gift, and then they got an amount of money in an account. And it was supposedly their college account. But if they needed for other things, they could, with the parents, you know, okay, use it. It's a agreed to it type of deal. But they built up a fund. I know my daughter, by the time she was 16 years old, my daughter had, on her own accord, I didn't give her this money. She saved this money by jobs and or gifts that were given to her. She had something like $30,000 by 16. I know my other daughter, on Melissa's side, has the same thing. She has a massive amount of money saved up at an early age. And you go, where did they learn to do that? They learned to do it from you or me, or they didn't learn it at all. So maybe the last thing is the biggest gift you can give to your children and to your family members around you is the show of success. If you could share that, that is the greatest gift of all. I see it that way. People ask me, you know, what is your welfare? My welfare is I'm on the radio right now telling you who have nothing how to have something. And you're not paying a dime for this. It's just out there. You're obtaining this information free. I had a guy call me the other day. I talked to him for free. But you, my friends, need to get out there and do something with it. Well, listen, middle of the holidays, have a great day, have a great week, and remember always, it's not the money, it's the lifestyle. Have a great day.
Listening to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Want more of Del's unconventional wisdom? Go to lifestylesunlimited.com and click the radio tab. Listen to past shows, hear podcasts on demand, and find out how you can change your life today. The Del Walmsley Radio Show is part of the Lifestyles Unlimited Radio Network.
The information and opinions you hear on the Del Walmsley Radio Show are those of the host, Del Walmsley, his guests, and his callers, and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Del Walmsley Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Del Walmsley Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.